This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. In a series this week on problems common throughout Latin America, NPR is exploring what works and what doesn't by examining the region's major cities. Today, it's Venezuela's capital, Caracas. During the mid-20th century, petrodollars powered the local economy and built a tropical version of an American downtown. But as the oil money tapered off, Caracas ran headlong into the same economic reality that afflicts the rest of Latin America. Jobs are scarce, and much of the middle class finds itself trying to make a living on the black market. NPR's Martin Casti has this portrait of the city.
Caracas is the most Americanized of the big Latin American capitals. This is especially apparent when you're sitting behind home plate. Venezuela is the rare South American country where soccer takes a back seat to baseball. On this beautiful Sunday afternoon, the Guaira Sharks are playing a doubleheader against the Caracas Lions. The season starts soon after the World Series, which allows Venezuelan big leaguers to come home and play here. Of course, the scene isn't entirely American. The fans like to sing, and the vendors are hawking ice-cold sangrias. Looming above the stadium is Avila Mountain, a jungle-covered giant that walls the city off from the sea. The sky is a piercing blue unless it's time for one of the tropical downpours that are so heavy they sometimes wash away whole neighborhoods. Caracas blends Caribbean fun, Spanish traditionalism, and American commercialism, and the mix isn't always pleasant. In the days of the oil boom, the government crisscrossed the city with L.A.-style freeways, which are clogged by a fleet of sagging American gas guzzlers. But when the big cars come off the freeways and enter the city streets, they're reduced to a crawl. The reason is a phenomenon that's spreading all across Latin America. Street vendors on almost every sidewalk and spilling into traffic. Even historical districts downtown are crowded. Vendors sell pirated DVDs and fake Harry Potters right outside the colonial house in which the great liberator Simon Bolivar was born. This is what's euphemistically referred to as the informal economy because these people pay no taxes, no social security, no rent. Some of the businesses are quite inventive. Fran Reynaldo Delgado runs a brisk trade renting out plastic stools. He says he got the idea watching retirees standing in line for their pensions. I started out with 7 stools, and today I have 500. It's seasonal work, but whenever and wherever a line forms, I bring out my stools, Delgado says. For him, the stool business is a step up because he's never had a proper job. But many of the street vendors are people who used to have jobs with regular paychecks and benefits. Candy Savaneta worked as a seamstress in a jeans factory until it went out of business 3 years ago. Now she sits at a card table and rents out time on 3 battered cell phones. Basically, she's a private payphone service. She jockeys for space on the sidewalk with people selling everything from haircuts to fresh fish. And the street is so full of vendors here that cars no longer get through.
This used to be a little more spread out, but now there are more vendors than buyers. People give us dirty looks, but what are we supposed to do? We need to work.
Savaneta takes her situation with good grace. She says her new occupation gives her more time to read the miniature Bible she keeps with her cell phones. Vladimir Zanoni studies the so-called informal economy for a think tank called CEDICE. He estimates the number of street vendors in Caracas has nearly tripled in 2 years.
53% of people who has an employment in Venezuela is working in the informal economy. So informal sector is the biggest labor sector who has employment in Venezuela.
Zanoni says the informal economy has deep roots. Even during the good times, about 40% of all jobs were under the table. To make up for the lost payroll taxes, the government merely borrowed money to prop up Venezuela's middle-class lifestyle.
International financial system, just lend money to Venezuela, no problem, they will pay. As soon as the oil prices go down, we couldn't afford it anymore. And today we can see the results.
Zanoni is a free marketeer, and he believes government control of key industries, such as oil and tourism, has made it harder for Venezuelans to create the kind of formal jobs that would generate taxes and sustain a middle class. He blames the layers of bureaucracy faced by anyone who tries to open a legitimate business. This is a problem across the continent, he says, but in Caracas, memories of oil boom prosperity make it hard for people to accept what's happening to their city.
People hasn't assimilated yet. We are a poor country, you know, we actually are a poor country.
Whatever the structural causes might be of Venezuela's job shortage, the political turmoil of the past few years has just made things worse, as investors stand by and wait as the opposition slugs it out with President Hugo Chavez. Caracas certainly looks more and more like impoverished capitals elsewhere in Latin America. Iris Cauchon sells T-shirts from a rack on the corner of Abraham Lincoln Avenue. She studied to be a lab technician, but she never found a job. She spends 12 hours a day sitting out on this corner, and she's sorry to see the chaos engulfing her city. Things are in collapse. There's a tremendous anarchy, Cauchon says. Crime is getting so bad, the street vendors now pay retired policemen to provide protection. Just another step toward the off-the-books economy. But it's not just the crime. Caracas as a whole seems to be falling apart. The streets of downtown are filled with rubbish and rank smells. The air is clogged with unleaded gas fumes. Amidst all this chaos and noise, it's a relief to spot a sign for the subway. The clean stations offer an escape from the scum above ground. No vendors are allowed to set up shop on the platforms, which means people are free to walk a straight line unimpeded. The subway is arguably the most pleasant public space left in downtown Caracas. But Caracas does offer a few other havens. For example, there's a certain bar called El Maní Es Así. In a city full of salsa clubs, this cozy little place, just enough room for a bar, a tiny stage, and a dance floor, is considered the best. At least that's according to Enrique Bessoni, a sometimes percussionist known to his friends as Merengue.
El Maní es un lugar de los más viejos.
The Maní is the hangout of the oldest salseros, he says. People come here to dance and leave their problems at home. Luis Manuel Hernandez is a computer engineer who's come back to live in Caracas after several years abroad. He says life in the city is a lot harder than he remembers, but the city still offers some compensations.
This, the salsa, the climate, you know, the weather, and everywhere you go, that you could go, that you could dance, this music is really, I don't know how to say, exciting.
Excitement is certainly one thing Caracas residents still have in abundance, whether dancing at the salsa club or walking the gauntlet of the city's increasingly chaotic streets. Martin Costi, NPR News.
Tomorrow, the sprawling megalopolis of Sao Paulo, Brazil. Despite an endless forest of skyscrapers, much of the population is forced to resort to land grabs to find a place to live.